Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. Slow Down the Degrowth Manifesto by Kohei Sato is a political and ecological manifesto that challenges the idea that economic growth can solve the climate crisis. Building on Marx's theory and Sato's earlier work on Marx and ecology, the book argues that capitalism's dependence on perpetual expansion is structurally incompatible with planetary limits. Rather than treating decarbonization as a technical problem for markets or governments alone, Sato frames it as a question of power, labor, ownership, and social organization. The book is designed for readers who want a serious alternative to green capitalism and reformist climate policy. Its purpose is not simply to criticize growth, but to outline a different social model centered on reduced production, shorter working hours, commons-based ownership, and democratic control over economic life. In that sense, it sits at the intersection of political theory, environmental thought, and activist strategy, offering a compact but ambitious case for degrowth as a route toward ecological survival and social justice. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, capitalism's growth imperative as the root of ecological crisis. A central claim of the book is that the climate crisis cannot be understood as an accidental failure of markets, but as a consequence of capitalism's need for endless growth. Sato treats growth not as a neutral measure of prosperity, but as a structural demand built into modern capitalist economies, where investment profit and competition push firms and states to expand output continuously. This logic makes sustainability difficult because ecological limits eventually collide with the requirement to accumulate capital. The book therefore rejects the common assumption that better pricing, cleaner technology, or more efficient production will be enough. Instead, it argues that the system itself reproduces environmental damage. This matters because it shifts the conversation away from individual consumption or isolated policy fixes and toward the deeper organization of production. In Sato's view, the problem is not merely how much energy is used, but why the economy must keep expanding, even when expansion intensifies extraction, waste, and inequality. That diagnosis gives the book its urgency and distinguishes it from climate writing that stays within the boundaries of existing economic orthodoxy. Secondly, a Marxist ecological reinterpretation of social change. The book is distinctive because it draws on Marx not as a symbol of old industrial politics, but as a thinker whose unfinished critique of capitalism can be used to address ecological collapse. Sato uses Marx's categories to connect labor, nature, and society, arguing that capitalism exploits both workers and the natural world through the same growth-driven logic. This is not presented as a narrow class analysis detached from environmental concerns. Rather, class relations and ecological degradation are treated as intertwined. The book also reflects Sato's broader scholarly project of revisiting Marx's later work on soil, metabolism, and limits, which helps him challenge the idea that Marxism must be pro-growth. By doing so, he tries to recover a strand of thought that supports post-capitalist sustainability instead of industrial expansion. For readers, this matters because the book does more than condemn capitalism in general terms. It provides a conceptual framework for understanding why ecological crisis is also a social and political crisis. The result is a form of environmental analysis that is explicitly anti-capitalist without reducing ecology to symbolism or moral language. Thirdly, degrowth communism as an alternative to green capitalism. Sato's main positive proposal is degrowth communism, a term that signals a deliberate break with the idea that environmental protection must still operate through growth. In the book, degrowth does not mean austerity for its own sake or a simple call for less consumption. It refers to a planned social transition in which production is reorganized around meeting needs within ecological limits. This is why Sato criticizes green capitalism, which he sees as relying on renewable energy, market incentives, or corporate responsibility while leaving the growth imperative intact. He argues that these approaches often shift the environmental burden rather than solving it. Degrowth communism, by contrast, aims at a transformation of ownership and decision-making so that the economy serves survival rather than accumulation. The word communism here indicates common control and democratic coordination, not a nostalgic return to past state socialism. The proposal is provocative because it reframes climate politics as a question of economic system change rather than cleaner management of the status quo. Its significance lies in turning degrowth from a lifestyle slogan into a program for restructuring society. Fourthly, shorter working hours, labor reform, and the redistribution of social effort. A practical part of the book's argument is that ecological transition should be tied to labor reform, especially shorter working hours. Sato presents this as both a social and environmental measure. If people work less, the economy can produce less unnecessary output, lower its material throughput, and reduce the pressure to expand consumption. At the same time, shorter hours can improve quality of life by giving workers more time outside wage labor and by weakening the link between dignity and overwork. This proposal is important because it shows that degrowth is not only about sacrifice. It is also about redistributing time and freeing people from a labor regime that serves accumulation more than human well-being. Saito links this idea to workplace democracy and worker cooperatives, suggesting that production should be organized by the people who do the work rather than by distant owners or growth-oriented managers. The book therefore treats labor policy as a climate policy, not because work itself is the enemy, but because the structure of work determines how much society produces, what it values, and who benefits from economic activity. Lastly, commons, municipalism, and democratic control over production. Another major theme is the rebuilding of economic life through commons-based production and local democratic institutions. Saito argues that solving the climate crisis requires more than changing national targets or carbon accounting. It requires creating forms of ownership and governance that allow communities to control resources directly. Commons-based production means treating land, infrastructure, and productive capacity as shared social goods rather than private assets organized for profit. Municipalism extends this logic to the city level, where local governments and civic institutions can support public, cooperative, and participatory forms of decision-making. The book points to this kind of politics as a way to make ecological transition tangible, because abstract calls for transformation become concrete when rooted in workplaces, neighborhoods, and cities. This emphasis also helps the book avoid a purely top-down model of change. Saito sees bottom-up organization as essential because a post-growth economy would need active participation from workers and communities, not just expert administration. The result is a vision of democracy that goes beyond elections and toward direct control over production, distribution, and everyday material life. In conclusion, Slow Down is best suited for readers who want a serious, theory-driven challenge to mainstream climate politics, scholars of political economy. Environmental studies, Marxist theory, and social movements will find it especially useful. But it can also benefit general readers who suspect that green growth is not a credible solution to ecological breakdown. Its main value is that it does not treat climate change as a technical management problem. Instead, it asks readers to rethink work, ownership, production, and the meaning of prosperity itself. Compared with many books in the climate genre, it is more explicit about systemic conflict and more willing to argue for structural economic change rather than incremental adjustment. That makes it stand out as both a critique and a proposal. It attacks the growth logic of capitalism while sketching a concrete alternative built around commons, shorter working hours, and democratic control. Readers looking for a moderate policy roadmap may find it challenging, but those interested in the deeper political roots of the ecological crisis will find it intellectually bracing and conceptually distinctive. If you would like to support Keio Heihei Saito, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.